This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. As Ohio goes is a familiar phrase, especially during election season. The Buckeye State has voted for the winner in every presidential election but two. And that prompted author Rena Corey, a political scientist and a PhD candidate in political science at Northwestern University, to ask the question, if the nation follows Ohio, where is America headed? So she traveled her home state of Ohio during the 2012 presidential election, talking with people hit hardest by the Great Recession. Rena Corey joins us to talk about the book that resulted from her journey and her conversations, As Ohio Goes, Life in the Post-Recession Nation. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Rena, good afternoon.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Rena, talk about why you decided to write this book. What led you to do this?
You know, at the time, I had been living in Washington, D.C. for a while. I had gone to school down there and was down there for a bit. And it was increasingly feeling like I was in this sort of bubble of people who were always talking about politics, and yet it felt like there's something they weren't quite getting. I think that their notion of what's going on in the rest of the country was a little limited. And the more I started to think about this and myself doing some research about the recession, I found that as much as there was good work coming out by economists and other analysts, I wasn't getting it either because I wasn't getting a human story. So I felt I wanted to actually get those faces and those names and those stories and understand what was going on in the country.
And they called it, you hear it called the Great Recession, lasted from 2007 until, 2009, right?
Right.
How bad was it? Was it really a Great Recession?
Oh, yes. This was historical. It's certainly the worst we've had since the Great Depression. And I think that, you know, the numbers sort of all show how bad it was, the unemployment rates, the decline, the foreclosure crisis that happened around the same time. So people were feeling it in a lot of ways. They were feeling it home and in their jobs. And another thing, though, that's something else that's historic that was going on for a longer time was this growing income inequality. That was also reaching record numbers at around the same time, and that was a longer-term process that got us there.
So you traveled Ohio during 2012. Now why Ohio? Why did you think this would make for some good interviews and good examples of putting that human face on this issue?
Sure. Well, certainly Ohio is the place that I call home, but there's definitely more to it than that. Ohio, you know, I think it really is sort of quintessential of the American experience. It's what we might say is a good case study. It's got all the major industries in the U.S. We've got agriculture, manufacturing, tech, medical, higher education. That's all here. And we've also got a good mix of people, as you know, that the state is sort of evenly divided between the major political parties. And so I think that felt like a really good place to start if I want to get what's going on around the country.
Yeah, you hear states categorized as red states, blue states. Does that work with Ohio, do you think?
Yeah, so historically, as you mentioned in the intro, the state has voted for the president for over a century with two exceptions, but those two exceptions were both Democrats. So we can say that the state has always voted for the Republican winner. And I think that there has been some talk recently about, well, maybe Ohio is becoming more red-leaning. It seems to be we're more Republican-leaning. And that might be the case, but it's still pretty close. It's still a better mix than you find in other places like D.C. or California or other red states.
Now, talk about your travels around the state. Where did you go specifically?
Sure. So I started what we might call with some exploratory field work, sort of just getting a feel for things at first and talking to greater numbers of people as I can. So I started by actually going to county fairs it worked out. It was summertime. So I used to drive from one place to another, going to these county fairs and talking to people there. I became a little more systematic over time, and really my sampling is what we might call purposive. I was looking to capture a good, diverse, representative group of people. So, you know, I definitely wanted to go to Toledo and talk to some people in the auto industry. And I went down to agricultural areas to talk to people who are in farming. I went down to, you know, the more Appalachian areas in the Southeast to talk to people who have experienced this coal, these coal findings. So I tried to get around to different places. And, you know, Ohio is a very diverse state. You've got very different feelings for things. I even remember in some places people had different accents. They spoke differently than they did up in Cleveland near where I grew up.
Now, what stood out the most? You did, 50 interviews, is that right, to over a 12-month period?
Oh, I think I did some more than that. Maybe 60 or 70 some interviews, yeah.
What stood out to you the most as you were doing these interviews?
I think what stood out to me the most was sort of seeing all the goodness in people. When you study political science, you tend to study pretty grim things and some sad topics, you know. And it's so refreshing to have that goodness and to see people who are really caring about their families and they're really caring about their work. And nobody I met wasn't working hard. People who, you know, are whether they're working in factories or whether they're sort of in-home medical assistants, they're all working really hard. And I think that's something that sometimes we need to reconfirm for ourselves, that for all the divisiveness that we have in this country, really everyone's just trying to take care of themselves and their family.
Did it surprise you how much adaptability and resilience you saw in the folks you were talking to?
Absolutely. I was astonished by them again and again. People who fell hard and they kept falling and they came back up. People who just were stumbling along for a long time. And they keep managing. They find ways. I mean, no matter what our feelings are about sort of a social security system or government assistance, people just keep finding ways. You know, and the government helps and people help themselves. It's a combination of the two. I don't want to sort of look at this all back with rose-colored glasses. I mean, a lot of people are really just struggling. And I think you sometimes see this lack of sort of will that happens when people are discouraged enough. You know, I met one gentleman. He not only lost his job, but he lost his wife. She had a heart attack within 6 months of having lost his job. Mm. And you know, he wasn't shining, you know, like he came back up from that very easily. I mean, there are some big blows that people sort of have to deal with in life, and it's difficult. There's struggles.
Tell us about some of the other people you interviewed.
I think what interested me in talking to people is I was sort of a stranger coming along to ask them questions about their lives, and sometimes almost all the time, quite personal questions about their finances, about their families, their marriages. And people were so open. And I would always wonder, would I be that open if I were on the other side of this? But they were. And I think there was a couple things going on there. Some people told me, you know, the folks in Toledo, they told me, we want you to go tell our story. So they were very forthright with me for that reason. They told me everything. They helped me out. They connected me to other people. Other people were likewise forthright, but I think it came from a place of, my story doesn't matter. Sure, I'll tell you. What's there to lose? Who are you? And so there's these mixed motivations, but in the end, it's the same thing, that people just sort of let me in and shared.
Now, as you're doing this, Rena, are you getting a sense of, because Ohio used to be such a strong industrial state, yet so much of the automotive industry based in Ohio, did you get a sense of what's happened to the influence of labor unions in national politics?
Sure. It's absolutely And in my view, unfortunately, it's declined tremendously. You know, there's not been a lot of sort of ability for unions to keep themselves organized. They are being fought in state legislatures that are trying to introduce more ways to weaken them. And it really takes away a collective voice that I think improved the lives of all Americans for a long time. Not only members of unions who received the benefits of being in union, but I think members of people who work for non-union corporations, for instance, they also benefit from the minimum wage, and they also benefit from required time off. They also benefit from extra pay for extra hours worked. So we all benefit from these things that unions have historically secured for us. And capital, you know, the sort of other side of the relationship, if we're talking about the capital-labor relationship, you know, they're already powerful, and they have no trouble, you know, getting their way and making their voices heard in Washington. And in fact, the representation in Washington has increased many-fold in the last 30, 40 years. There didn't used to be that much corporate lobbyists down there in D.C., but there's hundreds and hundreds of them now, whereas the representation of unions in Washington has held absolutely steady. It has not increased while there's this many-fold increase on the other side.
I'm talking with Rena Corey. She's the author of the book, As Ohio Goes, Life in the Post-Recession Nation. And Rena, have we truly recovered from the Great Recession?
You know, that's a good question, because technically, sure, the recession ended in 2009, and the sort of GDP reflected that. But the question that we have to ask is, well, if we started making money as a country again, where was that money going? And the vast majority of gains in that period were going to the top 1%. So nobody else of the rest of the normal Americans were feeling that those gains. People who had lost their jobs, when they find reemployment, they often find employment that's not paying them as well. Or they're often working in positions that they are overqualified for instance. You know, if they lost their 401k or if they lost their home, they didn't get that back. So a lot of people were struggling well beyond 2009. They were suffering the repercussions despite the supposed growth. And I think we've just seen, you know, I'm happy to see that our unemployment rate is back to a normal level again. We should all celebrate that. But at the same time, you know, the regulations on Wall Street are being dismantled. We're seeing that the ways that the top percent of the income ladder is just making more and more money than ever. And so even if we're all sort of doing okay and getting by, there's some severe inequalities that we continue to be on that path.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the discussion. And let's talk to Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hi. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
Good. I just wanted to mention my great-grandfather. I was glad to hear the Toledo mentioned. I was born and raised in Toledo, and my great-grandfather came from Germany, and he built most of the churches. He was a stonemason in Toledo, Ohio, and he had 13 children, and I grew up across the street from a mansion. But I bought my grandmother's house after moving to Cincinnati when my aunt passed away. I moved back to Toledo for 5 years, and in her attic, I found all kinds of archives from political things, like posters with pictures that I have of people running for city council. My great uncle was he helped design downtown Toledo and put the streets in, and all the way down to my brother who moved here several years ago when we built the new Bengals Stadium, and he built the locker rooms. So I can't go from Toledo to Cincinnati without seeing anything that my family hasn't built.
And, so everybody in the family was a Mason, is that right, Tom?
Yes, three generations.
Three generations of Masons.
Generations. Yes, from the churches to the old apartment complexes to the new Bengals Stadium, and I owned two homes back in 2004, and I'm now 56 years old and a grandfather, and I'm homeless. The recession hit me and hit me hard, and it was just been a very trying time.
So it's hit you hard.
Decade.
Yeah.
It hit my whole family hard.
Wow.
Yeah. I was just so glad to hear Toledo. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Tom.
Tom, no, it's so nice to hear from you. Thank you. It sounds like we all, you know, around the state have benefited from your family's history. You see those marks and we see those too. That's an incredible history. And, you know, I see what you're saying, that sort of tragic irony, how they built all these things and now you're without a home. And that's terrible, and I'm so sorry to hear it.
Well, and it shows that while we have been recovering from the Great Recession, it's more of a case-by-case thing, isn't it, Rena? I mean, some people have, some people haven't. Some people, like Tom, it impacted them greatly.
Absolutely.
513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can join us on Facebook or Twitter. And Rena, what were some of the other key takeaways that you had from doing all this research?
You know, I sort of went into this thinking what's happening in this country economically really matters. And a lot of the time we see a lot of division on social and cultural issues. And while those things are important, they're probably things we'll never necessarily agree on. People have their own opinions about what families should look like and, you know, what marriage should look like. People have their opinions. We can all be better informed about how we reach our conclusions on those things. But something that we do all have in common is economic issues. We're all here. We all need to find a way to make a living in this life. And when we're all collectively sort of facing a lot of trouble in making that living, that's something that could bring us together. That's something that we do share, whatever our opinions about these other issues are. So, and I saw that again and again. I saw very different people. You know, we can talk about a black woman who's living in a rough neighborhood in the eastern parts of Cleveland. And what does she have in common with a white farmer down in southwest Ohio? Some people might think nothing, but I would say that's incorrect. I think they have a lot in common, which is that they're just trying to get by. And how can we all figure out ways to get by better together and share in what is really a rich country?
Let's talk to Jack now. Hi, Jack.
Any of the people you've interviewed talk about, have any sense about labor history in the United States? When Labor Day rolls around, I'm always surprised that my kids in school have no idea what it means and what kinds of things are accomplished and what kinds of things are being lost now.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think probably people who aren't involved in sort of labor politics or in unions, maybe some of them don't know that history. And I went to a public school here in Ohio, and I don't remember learning much about it either. And there's some things in that history that would surprise us. I think, you know, for instance, people talk about, well, why don't we have a socialist party in the U.S. when similar industrialized democracies in Europe, they all have socialist parties? Well, we did, actually. There was a time where we had socialist parties. There was also a time where we had a lot of labor activism, and there was a lot of national strikes. that we just haven't seen in decades. So we don't see it. So we have to, you know, learn about it. It becomes this sort of topic of history, and it's not so much a topic of the present anymore.
Let's talk to Charles in Blue Ash. Hi, Charles.
Hello.
Hello. Go right ahead, Charles.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Listen, the question I'm more concerned about is the political structure, and my own reading. Maybe I'm looking for confirmation on this, or maybe correction. But how really involved is the political leadership, both on the local and state level, with, and I imagine there are exceptions, with really the daily lives of people and their issues? I mean, do they go out to find it, besides maybe some town halls, or do they just come when there's an election time? And is there really an understanding of what's going on in Ohio?
Sure. Well, I mean, Charles, I'm sure you have, you know, your experience wherever you live, that you could speak to what your local politics looks like. I think one thing that I know is that I think that even at the national level, politicians do sort of pay attention to what their constituents are saying. So I think if we sort of make our voices heard to politicians at all level, at local, state, national, I think they'll listen. Will they respond is sort of another question. I can't tell you what I'm about to tell you at the state level, but I know that at the national level, in the Senate and the House of, in Congress, they don't necessarily respond to the preferences of most people. We have sort of lots of opinion polls telling us this is how people feel, and then we have lots of research telling us these are the policies that were made. And those things aren't necessarily correlated for most people, but they do tend to be correlated for people at top income levels. So if people at top income levels feel a certain way, that seems to make its way into policy better than it does for the rest of us, unfortunately. But I would say I think probably local politics is the best level at which to at least try to be heard and to try to get involved. And to be involved with our communities is a good place to start.
Rena, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Rena Corey, she's the author of As Ohio Goes, Life in the Post-Recession Nation.